Hey guys, I want to welcome you to the Mosaic Podcast. I'm Pastor Erwin Raphael McManus, and just wanted to thank you for listening. In case you didn't know, I just released a new book. It's called The Genius of Jesus, The Man Who Changed Everything. And you can order it today at thegeniusofjesus.com.
You would think the theme, the new, would not be very new. But one of the great challenges in the space of faith is that so oftentimes we're much more captivated by the old than we are by the new. In fact, there's something about not just Christianity, but religions as a whole that it seemed to be better at holding on to the past than taking hold of the future. And so there's a tension sometimes because when we talk about the new, it seems so much of the conversations around faith are really about fear of the new. And a romantic relationship to the old. I started doing some research just to remind myself what the struggle is, because one of the interesting things about something that's new is that once it's embraced, it becomes the old. And so something doesn't really stay new forever. And there are always different things I hear about realities that I have to go back and ask myself, is that really real? I think we probably all heard that every cell in our body regenerates every 7 years, and that's almost true. There are some cells in our body that regenerate every 4 or 5 days because they're connected to our stomach, and our stomachs demand the new. And there's some of our cells that take up to 10 years to renew, and then it seems that our brain cells do not actually renew, which is really disturbing. That the only part of us that actually gets older and older and older is our brain. But then there's some new research in neurogenesis that says maybe parts of the brain are new too. And I started thinking how strange it is that we are physiologically, biologically being made new all the time, whether we believe in God or not. No matter what our faith is, whatever our background is, whether we're Buddhists or Muslims or Catholics or Hindus or atheists or agnostics or just downright confused, all of us are being made new all the time. It's inherent in our genetic makeup. In fact, if you stop being made new, you die. But not right away. See, one thing they've discovered is that when you die, it takes sometimes hours, if not days, for all your cells to die. And so if all of your cells have all the genetic composition of you, it means there's some of you that actually knows you're dead. Long after you're dead, just waiting to die. I wonder how many of us are actually more like that. And I look back and I thought, you know, one of the big dramatic moments of the new was Copernicus. I love Copernicus. I love Copernicus because he said something that was true and it got him in a lot of trouble. Copernicus was a heretic because he decided that he would unwrap this idea that the earth is not the center of the universe, that the entire universe does not revolve around the earth, but in fact that the earth revolves around the sun, and that there's this ever-expanding galaxy, and everyone thought Copernicus was out of his mind, and I just pulled up a couple of quotes which I thought were so interesting, because Western Christianity has mostly been affected by two people, John Calvin and Martin Luther. And they were both contemporaries of Copernicus, and so John Calvin said this, he said, "We indeed are not ignorant that the circuit of the heavens is finite, and that the earth, like a little globe, is placed in the center." John Calvin, the great theologian, said, "Everybody knows that God holds the earth like a globe, and the entire universe revolves around it." And I think how amazing that most of Christianity's thinking is still shaped by someone who thought that the earth was the center of the universe. Martin Luther said this. He said some other things that I really wanted to repeat, but I couldn't repeat them. And he said, speaking of Copernicus, "He must do something of his own. This is what that fellow does, who wishes to turn the whole of astronomy upside down. Even in these things that are thrown into disorder, I believe in the Holy Scriptures." Martin Luther was angry because Copernicus was willing to violate their view of reality. John Calvin was angry and used the scriptures to convince people that Copernicus was violating God's view of reality. I wonder how many times we actually use God's name to defend our own inability to see the new and our fear to let go of the old. I want to talk to you for a few moments about the new reality. And of course, history has progressed. Around 1680, Newton came up with his laws, and Newton had huge breakthroughs that seemed to explain everything until, of course, Einstein came along. And then around 1915, Einstein came up with this theory of special relativity, and this phrase that has become famous of E equals MC squared has become known by everyone. And this incredible idea that mass and energy are actually the same thing, but moving at different speeds, different rates of speed. And to me, this is so exciting because it sounds like magic. A scientist sounds like he's a magician saying everything is energy. It's so obvious he's wrong. It's so clear Einstein is wrong. Because what we see is reality, or is it? One of my great challenges when it came to faith, and one of the reasons I love this particular event, because we can talk about things that we don't usually talk about. See, when I was growing up, I had views of reality that were violated when I came to faith. Not by Jesus and not by the Bible, but by Christians. And I thought that I had to take all these different ideas and flatten them down so that I could think like a Christian. And one of the huge problems in our faith is that we think we're supposed to have big hearts but small brains. And I want to submit to you that one of the new realities is that people of faith need to be the best thinkers in the world. I just had today the same conversation. I walked over to a store, and the guy who was there walking us through said, "I'm an atheist." He was from Sweden. Seemed like a really wonderful guy. I said, "You're an atheist." And he goes, "Yes, I am." And I said, I could never be an atheist. I believe in endless possibilities." And he said, whoa. He said, "I don't." I said, "It's amazing that you can be an atheist. I don't have that level of certainty about anything." He goes, "Well, I'm not really certain." I said, "So you're not an atheist?" He goes, "Well, I'm not one of those atheists that thinks they're right or sure or certain. I'm just an atheist who believes there's no God." I said, "That's fascinating." And we just had this little brief conversation. I thought, it to me is so amazing because, see, when I came to faith, I thought that my brain had to get smaller and smaller and smaller. My ideas had to get smaller and smaller and smaller. My imagination had to get smaller and smaller and smaller. If you hear nothing else from me over these days, I want you to know that is not Jesus' mandate for your life. When you enter into a relationship with Jesus, let me tell you what he's going to do. He's going to erase the boundaries of your imagination. He's going to open you up to endless possibilities. I'm convinced that when you actually grow in a relationship with Jesus, you get smarter because you are no longer allowed to be arrogant and dogmatic. You have to be open that there is truth out there that you have not yet gotten a hold of. You have to learn how to live in uncertainty and mystery and love the fact that you don't know everything you think you know. So I grew up with all these different ideas and thoughts connected to quantum mechanics and complexity theory and string theory and the possibilities of not a universe but multiverses, and I couldn't find any space in faith where that was allowed, where you could have conversations about it. But I keep finding that there was a period of time where science seemed to be a violation of faith, but now I find science to keep affirming the complexity of faith. See, when I first heard about complexity theory, I thought, this is amazing that complexity theory believes that a butterfly flapping its wings in the Amazon can actually have an effect and cause an avalanche in Antarctica. It sounds as if one action can cause a cosmic reaction, as if one person could take one fruit from a tree and cause the entire universe to go into chaos. And I start wondering if we need to step back and begin listening to the scriptures in a fresh new way and understand that God's trying to take us into a new reality. So I want to throw you into a new reality. I want to throw out the possibility that you are not of this world. And you think you're of this world because all the material evidence tells you you are. But it's the same kind of data that tells you that wood is not energy. Just because your test of reality with your senses violates the reality doesn't mean it's not more real. One of the verses that I've always been intrigued with, because I want to learn how to think like God. In Isaiah 55:9, the scriptures tell us, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. I read that and I go, I agree. It's really obvious, God, that you and I are not the same, that you're thinking at a different level. But one of the things I do know is that I'm thinking at a different level now than I used to. And I never thought I could live and think and see at this level. But when I was younger, I thought I was thinking and seeing at the highest level. And each time I live longer walking with Jesus, it's almost as if he keeps removing the ceiling and saying, you thought this was all I could do. You thought this is all you could see. That you thought this is all you could become, but there's more and there's more and there's more. So I thought about this imagery as the heavens are higher than the earth. And the imagery can sometimes help us and sometimes it can actually cripple us. You see, when we think about heaven and earth and hell, our ideas of heaven and hell are created out of a construct where we believe the earth was flat. And we thought the earth was flat, and so heaven is up and hell is down, and we're in the middle. I don't know if you've kept up with some of the recent advancements, but we've actually broken out of the atmosphere, have traveled into space, and heaven was not there. We've gone pretty far. We even found out not only that heaven was not there, but that Pluto is not a planet. We've made some incredible discoveries, and some of them have broken our hearts. And we thought that hell was down there. Except, where's down there? Except the center of the earth. Because now that it's round, down there is the other side of the earth. See, is it possible that our way of seeing reality has actually made us blind to the new reality? That heaven and earth and hell are not geographic locations separated by up and down, but they're textures of human experience. I want you to listen with me. Because what I love about Jesus and what I think is so interesting about him is that he seems to constantly contradict himself. He says, I will never leave you or forsake you. I go, thank you. And then he says, and I'm coming back. I go, good. All right, we need you to come back. But if you only believe he's coming back, you may miss that he's actually here. And you only believe he's here, you may miss he's coming back. See, well, but Jesus is here, but he's also there. So you know how we explain that? Well, he's God. He can be here, there, and everywhere because that's how Jesus rolls. In Ephesians chapter 1, verses 18 to 21, it says, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened. We're going to come back to that. In order that you may know the hope to which you've been called, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people, and his incomparably great power for us who believe. We're just getting started. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at the right hand in the heavenly realm. Far above all rule and authority, power and dominion, and every name that is invoked, not only in the present age, but also in the one to come. So what we know from the scriptures is that Jesus, who is here, has also been raised and is seated at the right hand in the heavenly realms. So if we're going to believe what it actually says, we have to believe these two things, that Jesus is here right now and that he's seated in the heavenlies. We go, thank God, God can do that. But then I want you to read a parallel passage in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 4. It's in the same book, written by the same guy, so he knows what he just said. In Ephesians chapter 2, verse 4 to 10, and I may not read that far, but it says this: "But because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive in Christ." We'll come back to that. "Even when we were dead in transgressions, it is by grace you have been saved." Now listen, verse 6. "And God raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus." Now you need to pay attention to the tenses, because it says that God took his power and raised Jesus from the dead and seated him at the right hand in the heavenly realms. And then he uses the exact same language to say, God has raised you up, he has raised me up, he has raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms. So I've always wondered, is it possible for there to be multiple universes that coexist at the same time? Are they different universes with different species and different entities? Or are those universes parallel to us and there are two me's and three me's and 3,000 me and 10,000 me's? Or is it the same me in every single dimension? Haven't you thought about that? And I have wondered to myself, how is it possible that a God who is eternal steps into time and stays with us in time, but stays in eternity? And what does that imply for us? And maybe, just maybe, when you look at things like string theory, that there might be an infinite number of futures, it explains some of the possibilities of how God can be a sovereign God and a God who gives us free will. Because what if there are an infinite number of futures and God is in every single one of those futures? And when we make a decision, we eliminate some futures and we create other ones, but they're not too big for God, because an infinite number of futures are small in comparison to an infinite God. I'm just sharing my thoughts with you, because these are the things that drive me crazy and cost me sleep every night. But what I see here and see what I know is this. So you can think I'm out of my mind, but this is not me. This is what the scriptures are saying. So you can say, "Erwin, I think you're out of your mind. I don't agree with you." But you're going to have to go back and read this and decide for yourself if you can believe in this possibility that seems impossible, that you are here in this moment, but you are also seated in eternity with Jesus right now. So you are a transcendent being that is not waiting for the day where you step out of time and space. They've been trying to understand the time-space continuum, and I think it's too limiting. We need to understand the continuum outside of time and space. That in this moment, you are already in eternity with God. You are at two places at the same time. Like, yay. I'm not sure if that's good. And so then maybe the question is not, are you in eternity, but are you living from eternity? But it goes on. "For it is by grace you have been saved through faith, and this not from yourselves, it is a gift of God. Not by works, so that no one can boast, for you are God's handiwork, you are God's craftsmanship, you are God's work of art, created in Christ Jesus to good work, which God has prepared in advance for us to do." Now, it says that you are God's workmanship. So I started thinking about artists. True artists care about the material they use. I have a friend named Mako Fujimura, a Japanese painter, one of the most brilliant artists I've ever known. And he goes to Japan and uses a particular kind of parchment that can only be created by a very small number of old Japanese craftsmen. And this skill takes so long that when they die, that skill will be lost. And he'll never be able to recreate the same level of art in that particular genre. And on that parchment, he'll use minerals that are precious, like gold. The colors, explode off the canvas because of the quality of the material he uses. And yet we think that God, as an artist, is using decaying material in his artwork. What would motivate God in any way to keep trying to redesign us with the dead of us and not the live of us? If we are God's workmanship, we should pay attention to the material that now is in us. Because the first thing the artist does is he chooses his canvas and he chooses his material. And then he begins to design his masterpiece. And I want to submit to you that you have material in you that is eternal. In Colossians 3, the same rhythm exists again. Verse 1. Since then, you have been raised with Christ. See, he's assuming this. I hope you get this now. He says, since then, you have been raised with Christ. See, if you don't understand this, nothing else is going to make sense to you. Since then, you have been raised. And you think, oh, but that's like a metaphor. We've been raised back to life. No, it says you were raised into the heavenly realms. You were taken out of time and space. You are no longer confined to the reality of this brokenness. You are now a citizen of eternity, and you can access that in time and space. Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above. Above where? Mars? Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. It says, set your hearts on things above, but they're only accessible in the heavenly realms if you're seated with Jesus there. See, if you choose to act like you are bound to this world, you will be bound to this world. If you choose to act like a prisoner of time and space, you will be a prisoner of time and space. But if you understand that you are an eternal being, and that you're not waiting for the end of time or the end of your life to begin your eternity, that eternity has been poured into your essence, that you have been transformed from the inside out, and that it is this eternity that God is using to create the masterpiece of you. What God is doing, just like your cells regenerate and they push away the dead and they step into the new. God is pushing out the old you and recreating you from the inside out. So since you've been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above. This is where we're supposed to live. See, this is a beautiful world because God gave it to us. You're supposed to enjoy this world. You're also supposed to take care of it. You're supposed to be a steward of this planet. And the things in this life are to be enjoyed because God loves when we experience pleasure. But what you need to realize is that you're not supposed to be confined or limited by the realities of this world. You're supposed to access the things from above. Then he says, set your minds on things above. Again, not on earthly things. Why? For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. For when Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will appear with him. Do you hear what he's telling you? You are already drenched in the glory and wonder and presence and beauty and power of Jesus. But if you want to act like you're just this earthly being confined to time and space, then God will let you. But if you realize that you have already stepped into the reality of eternity, you just need to unlock it and unleash it. And this is what's beautiful. You see, the metaphor, when God talks about heaven and he talks about earth, he shifts and he says, I want to talk to you about life. Because heaven is not a place. It's a space that is filled with the presence of God. And when you're alive, you are eternal. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, you will appear with him. Why? Because you're already with him. Have you realized that the new is already you? Have you come to embrace that you are the new? Stop waiting for the new to come. Step up and be the new, for it has come. And we are supposed to be the declaration of life, that the new is available for every person who gets sick of the old. I don't know about you, but I'm done wasting one more minute dying. I'm gonna spend every minute living. Now listen to what the scriptures tell us in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 4. For while we are in this tent, I love that. For while we are in this tent, we groan and are burdened because we do not wish to be unclothed, but to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling, so that what is mortal, listen to this, may be swallowed up by life. So the imagery he's telling us here is, okay, here's what the tension is. You still have a temporary tent. This body is a temporary tent. Every year I live, I'm kind of glad it's temporary. And this body is the last remnant of the old. But the new has already been born in me. And the new in me knows this body is just a tent. It's not a permanent residence. It's just a temporary space holder. And so my body is groaning. Oh, my knees are groaning, and my back is burdened, and all my joints are a declaration that something's wrong. That's right. And your body is trying to tell you that this is not the permanent you. And so we have this beautiful reminder of our bodies getting older and older and older because our bodies are still in this old order, but our soul, our spirit is alive and we are already the new. And so guess what? Your soul actually feels naked in your present body. That's what it says. See, your soul knows this isn't quite right. Your soul knows this is temporary. Your soul knows this is the old being pushed out because we do not wish to be unclothed. So our souls are longing for the day where our bodies catch up with us. But to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling. And here's what it looks like. Here's what the clothing looks like. So that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. So here is the outcome. Here's the outcome going, well, what do I do with this? All right. Okay, I can accept. I'm in two places at the same time. I'm in eternity and in time and space. I'm seated in the heavenlies with Jesus, and I'm living in the presence of Jesus right now. But what do I do with that? The journey on this earth is to allow the life in you to consume every part of you and to not allow that which is a part of the old to dictate who you are. You need to step up and tell yourself, that's the old, that's not the new. That's who I was, that's not who I am. And every day, what is mortal will be swallowed up by, not the immortal, but by life. See, we've, I think, held on to some wrong constructs. We thought, okay, this has got to be the end of time and then there's eternity. Now, if it's eternal, it's already going. You with me? See, it was eternal before time. It's eternal during time. It's eternal after time. Do you realize the implications of this? I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say this anyway. And you know, the scriptures tell us that Jesus, he was crucified. He had a couple of days off. God, you ever just had a couple of days? You go, I'm just going to do my thing. Right? So what does Jesus do when no one's looking for him? No one's asking him to do anything? What the scriptures tell us is he descends into hell. And it says that he proclaims the gospel to everyone there. And he set captives free. Now, stay with me for a minute. You see, earth, the human story, is contained within time. But our concepts of heaven and hell are outside of time. So that means everyone who's ever lived, who has gone to hell, was there. Everyone who died when Jesus was alive and went to hell was there. Everyone who has lived after Jesus and went to hell was there. And everyone who will ever live that is going to hell will be there. That every human being who will ever exist was there. And Jesus showed up, declared to them hope, and set them free. And I know people have free will and they have choice. But I'm kind of thinking, I was pondering in my mind, there was a time where people didn't believe the Americas existed. You know that? That's why Native Americans are called Indians. My grandfather from El Salvador told me when you go to the States, they're going to call you an Indian. They're going to call you an Indian because a man came across Europe, landed on the wrong continent, was confused. Don't let someone else's mistakes define you. And so, but just because you didn't believe the Americas existed didn't mean they did not exist. See, someone may not believe Africa existed, but it existed. But let's say you went on a trip on a ship in the 1500s, and the ship got blown off course, and you landed in America, and there was an In-N-Out burger, and you went, oh, it really exists. See, it's a lot easier to convince someone who's there that it's real. And then what if, while you're there, you were hoping someone would come and help you because you don't know how to get out of where you're at? You know how you got there, but you don't know how to get out. And you're not sure who's actually God, and you're not sure what religion is right, and you're not sure what you should believe, but only one person shows up, and his name is Jesus. And he declares freedom to you. And he says, I know you earned this, I know you deserve this, I know you chose this, but I came down here because I'm not giving up on you, so get out of here right now! See, why do we keep limiting God to time and space when God is eternal and so is his love? These are just thoughts that I think we should consider. Because as I've stepped into a relationship with Jesus, I've experienced something shift inside of me. I find myself less and less comfortable with living as if I'm a species contained in time and space. And I find it so much more natural to live my life as if I'm spirit, transcendent, connected to the creator of the universe, and have access to life. You do not have access to a lower grade of life than you will have in eternity. Jesus only gives one kind of life. It's life. The question is not, is Jesus giving you a lesser life to survive this life? The question is, are you satisfied with a lesser life in this life? Or maybe it's time to say, Jesus, I believe you are life. And I am convinced that you have transformed me and that you have erupted life within me. I believe that the material inside of me is called life. And that life is transcendent. It cannot be stopped by death, so I don't have to worry about death. It cannot be contained by time, so I don't have to be limited by time. It cannot be contained by space, so I don't have to act like I'm a victim to space. I know I'm alive, and you have to decide how much of that life will you access and take a hold of. I want all the life that God has for me. How about you? I want us to change humanity's view of reality. I want us to be the new reality. When I was a kid, because I was, messed up, I actually came to a point where I convinced myself I was from another planet. And it was all the science fiction I was reading. Never seen a Bible, but I read a lot of Robert Heinlein and Isaac Asimov and all those guys. And I used to run away a lot. I would go out to fields and I would look at the stars in the middle of the night and I would just scream. I would just beg whoever left me here to come back and get me. I convinced myself that I was like a social experiment, that my species was trying to see if we could integrate with humans. And I wanted to let them know, no, It doesn't work. And we don't work with humans. And we look like them. We move like them. We have a lot of features like them. But I just knew that whatever species I was, it couldn't be this one. Because I felt so disconnected and alone and broken and empty. And I realized what was happening is my soul didn't know how to translate the fact that I knew I was dead. And I was existing. And if I accepted this as the only reality that there was, I would die never having lived. See, that's why Jesus came. He didn't come to make you a better person. He came to make you a new human. And you'll never step in the fullness of who Jesus longs for you to be if you don't realize you are not of this world. That's why the scriptures tell us that you are an alien and a stranger in this world. Because you've been redesigned with new material. And I don't know what your old material looked like, but don't let anyone tell you you still are who you were. You need to go back home, look in the mirror and go, I look the same on the outside, but it's all new material on the inside. We've been wrong about a lot of things. We thought the world was flat. We thought that the sun revolved around the earth. We thought that matter and energy were two different things. We've been wrong about so many things. And we've also been wrong about what it means to be human. And there's so much conversation now about, humans are just no different than any other species. Do you realize that to make that declaration is a violation of everything that's obvious? Not just everything that's true, but of what's obvious. See, you are a transcendent being. You have a consciousness. You're aware of your existence and of your mortality. How could we ever have ideas of God? How could we have ideas of the infinite and the eternal? It's our souls trying to let us know that we've been confused by the mirage and we've relinquished the reality. And what Jesus came to do is he came to give us the reality of life. It's so hard to talk to people when you know their language, but you use different meanings with the same words. And Jesus would talk and talk and talk and say, you're blind. And they go, no, we can see. And they go, trust me, you're blind. I say, oh, Jesus, he doesn't get it. We can see. Jesus says, you're dead. No, we're alive. No, you're saying you're dead. Oh, no, we're alive. Okay. It's all the words. You see, we have taken all the words that God gave us in our search for meaning, in our search for our intention, in our search for our connection to God, and we've diminished those words. Are you really living? Or are you just existing? Are you surviving? Are you bound by the old? I remember years ago when I was in Beverly Hills when I was working on some film projects and I had a chance to maybe sell a film and I had this guy, they said he was going to finance it and you know how that goes. So I drove up to Beverly Hills, it was 40 acres and there was a gated, I didn't know that somebody could have that many acres in Beverly Hills and there was a gated road and I had to get past the gated road and go down another road and get to his house while we were there, I was really nervous and he walks in and goes, you got 30 minutes. I have a meeting with CAA. He was not warm. He was not kind. He was just business. So I choked. I panicked. I just looked. And then my two friends who were producers started pitching my ideas and me. They did a really good job. And then finally looked at me and goes, you going to say anything? And I said, yeah. I'm Latino. And my mom always said, either take someone to a meal or bring them gifts, because that's the Latin way. And you didn't have time for meals, so I brought him some gifts, and I gave him a box of things, and books, and art, and work. And he pulls out this short film that was in there, and he goes, tell me about this one. I said, no, not that one. Pick a different one. Because right before I walked in, I said, I made a deal with God. You ever prayed, but really you were just telling God? I said, God, I'm so grateful that you got me here. But no one wants to make the movies I want to make because they know I'm a pastor. And they go, no, you need to make faith films. You need to make Christian films. I go, no, I want to make art pieces. And they go, yeah, no. And so I said, he doesn't know I'm a pastor. He doesn't even know I'm a Christian. So if it's okay with you, I'm not going to bring you up. I did. I said, God, okay, it's not personal. I'm just not going to bring you up because I really want to get a movie made, and you kind of get in my way. And so I didn't bring God up, and then he said, what's this film? And it was something around Ecclesiastes. And I said, you know, it's about a Jewish guy. And he goes, what do you mean? You know, like a Jewish philosopher, king, you know, named Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes, you know, in the Bible. And he goes, well, what's it about? And he goes, well, where Solomon says there's nothing new under the sun. He goes, well, do you agree with that? And I said, no, I think Solomon was wrong. He goes, well, then why is life so mundane? And I have this billionaire look at me and ask me, why is life so mundane? And I explained to him, well, you see, when you live your life outside of God, you are part of the created order. So there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new. You're just in the old. It's an endless cycle. But when you're a part of the creative order, when you're connected to the creator of the universe, he makes everything new. And he goes, can you come back tomorrow? And I said, to talk about my film? He said, no, I probably won't finance one of your films, but I'd like to talk more about this. So I said, sure. So I went home and came back the next day because, you know, I don't do anything. I don't work, right? So I just go up to Beverly Hills and we start walking and he explains to me he has a volleyball court where all these famous actors play volleyball every Saturday. He never invited me. And then as we're walking, he goes, you want to know why I asked you to come back? I said, sure. I'd like to know that. And he said, when I walked in, you had an unexplainable peace that I've been searching for all my life. I just wanted to know, where did you find that peace? I thought it was so funny. I was terrified. I was nervous. I was anxious. And all he experienced was peace. You know why? You see, you may decide you don't want to talk about God or you're not going to bring God into the room. But if you're alive, life goes with you everywhere you go. So I am so excited to be here with you tonight. But I want you to know this is not my better vantage point. Right now, in this moment, I am seated in the heavenlies. At the side of Jesus, I have complete access to life. I have everything God has ever hoped for me, wanted for me, promised me. It's all mine. And that me that is in eternity is wondering why the me that's in time and space is acting as if I'm trapped in time and space. I want to change your view of the time-space continuum. You are an eternal creature. You have already connected to the creator of the universe. You are transcendent. You are already the new. Now stop acting like the old and let the new begin.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Mosaic Podcast. I want to encourage you to take the message you just received and allow it to go deeply into your soul. Let Jesus do the deep work that only he can do. A special thank you to everyone who gives to Mosaic. Your sacrifice makes this podcast possible and creates life change all over the world. You can be a part of spreading this message around the world by going to mosaic.org/give. You can also subscribe, rate, and share this podcast with your friends and family. Thanks again for listening. God bless you.